Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Second hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. The bottom of the hour, Adam Rittenberg. We'll talk to him about a piece he put out there. The Arizona governor, did you guys see this? Says pro sports can resume without fans starting this weekend. Hey, open for business. Doug Ducey, who is the Arizona governor, has opened up the door for professional sports to return to the state. And so I bring that up to say, oh, by the way, there's another UFC fight night card in Jacksonville tonight. So they're going to put on another show tonight. And you've got NASCAR starting up this weekend.
Woohoo!
So what is it? So now that these things are starting to happen, it's going to push things, right? It's going to push things and set things more in motion. One, let's start with the Arizona governor. What? Why do you think this news came out yesterday? Were you surprised by it? What? Why did he? Why? I mean, just to come out and be like, okay, yeah, this weekend the doors are open. Let's go.
Actually, I don't know if I'm really surprised. I'm glad to hear a governor or a state come out and say specifically something about sports.
Right. That's what I'm getting at. The fact that he geared it around sports.
Yeah. It was more of a like, oh, okay, cool. And I wonder now if others will follow suit because, and he does it because I have a feeling in his mind, he's looking at it economically of, okay, if I say that my state is open and pro sports can resume, then one of the leagues or some, you know, more than one of the leagues will be like, okay, Arizona, we're going to target that. We'll just move everybody there. That was a plan that was out there, you know, with baseball. It would appear that it'll be their home stadiums, but I think that that's a good move on his part.
But your guess is as good as mine. I don't know if it's got any merit, really, although May 15th, goodness, I mean, that's pretty close.
This weekend.
Like now. It's like Friday. Yeah. That's Friday. So
yeah. Or I think he said 16th, didn't he? I think it was Saturday. He's like, yep, okay. Pro sports, you can return to Arizona.
Is there a specific event they're trying to open the door for?
I don't know.
Still way away from, quote, major league sports and any what we consider major league sports, the soccer, the, you know, all of the stuff that we talk about on a daily basis. Is there some kind of...
Well, I know the PGA goes to Arizona,
sure,
don't they? They probably go to that area. There's a lot of nice golf courses out there. No. That's why I'm asking, why do you think he came out with this?
I have no idea.
Yesterday,
you set yourself
said
up
this
to
weekend.
Have to change that date.
You know, that's what I thought was interesting. But I do wonder how much things starting to happen, what is going to be the trickle-down effect. Like I said, the UFC had a successful pay-per-view card on Saturday in Jacksonville. Now they're going to have a fight night card in Jacksonville tonight. NASCAR is going to get cranked up. And by the way, the UFC is just going to – they're going to, you know.
Have something this weekend too, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're keep pumping these things out, and NASCAR is going to do the same thing. Once they start this up, it's green light go. Pardon the pun on that. But, I mean, you just – they're going to have a lot of races, and so they're going to be in the news. And so you do wonder, okay, what's next? What are the, you know, the other sports that we're talking about? How much does that push them to even, you know, more try to figure out what their plan is?
I feel like if UFC and NASCAR start to dominate ratings or and get eyes on their sport, then that's going to light a fire under the others because they're going to realize, oh, we're missing out because they're, you know, I guess it was during the UFC. I can't remember if it was the prelims or the pay-per-view portion, but they had a video of President Trump saying that, you know, this is what we need. Hey, appreciate the UFC for
back. He did. Yeah, he did. They put out a video leading up to that card.
Was that in the prelims? That was on ESPN, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. In which, hey, if you're the UFC, okay. Now you have the president of the United States saying, hey, I'm glad that you're back. So I think it'll light a fire. I think you'll see more movement from the NBA or the NHL or MLB. MLS, there's a plan that I saw that basically has training opening up June 8th for individuals, full teams the 15th, and they could be playing games as early as June 22nd if everybody approves that plan. So,
anybody see Pierre LeBron on The Athletic? Well, some
yeah,
stuff
he had
about
another
Bill Daly.
Conversation, with Bill Daly. Bill Daly is taking a different approach for sure, as opposed to, we're going to do this on this date. You know, they have hesitated over and over to be any kind of definitive with what they're saying. And I think that's a reasonable approach, right? Even though we're all starved. Like, when are you going to start? When are you going to start? Like, how many times do you guys in conversation during the day with whoever is sending you texts, however you're communicating, whether you're just walking around, bump into somebody, or on the phone with somebody? The question I always get is, hey, when, especially for people outside of the business we're in, when is hockey going to start back up? You know, I get it a few times a day for sure, right? We're all starved to know answers.
Yeah, and
but
I hate
think
that
those,
the answer is
those
I don't
organizations.
Know.
Yeah, and every answer you heard Tim Kirkjian, I don't know, and we all don't know. But one thing that seems to be gaining momentum with the hockey is 24 teams. Right? And why? One of the things I hear a lot is so that you could get Chicago and Montreal in, which is really fascinating to me. You know, that screams of let's bend the rules so that we get big TV markets in. You know, what if one of those teams made a significant run in the playoffs? That's when you'd really have a lot of people from a purist standpoint saying, should these teams have? What did they really do to get in? It's very arbitrary that you move the line to get in teams. If that's any part of the motivation, that's wrong. Like if that was the Florida Panthers and the Arizona Coyotes in the same spots, and you wouldn't move it to 24 for them, but you would for Chicago and Montreal, something's not right about that.
Well, I don't. I think you're free and clear of being questioned about anything during this time. I mean, I don't know how you can. I mean, I get it. You say Montreal doesn't deserve to be in there. Okay, right? Is that's what you're saying? What is the cutoff then? Tell us the cutoff. Why Chicago and Montreal don't belong in there? Okay, then what's your cutoff? Arizona belong in?
They
got two more points. They have two more points than the Blackhawks. So they're in and Chicago's out? How do you feel about Arizona?
Montreal is really the one.
No, Montreal's 3 points behind Arizona. Montreal has...
But how many points from the eighth spot?
11 more games to play. So you know that Montreal for sure wasn't going to go 9-1-1 in their last 11? You know that for a fact?
I can't know that for a fact.
Right. That's the point. That's why I said they've got the opportunity to say, well, you don't know what they would have done in their final 11 or 12
games. Then Chicago's why don't we let 26 teams in?
Because Anaheim's got 67 points. That's the next team below them. Buffalo's got 68. I mean, they're even further back.
So you're okay with it?
I'm not saying I'm okay with
it. You
got
to be willing. You got to be willing to admit
it's really hard for you to
just because it's Chicago. Would you say that would they be willing to do that for Florida and Arizona as opposed to Chicago and Montreal?
Look, anytime we can single out Chicago and bang on them, I'm all for it. Always. I will never discourage beating up the Blackhawks. But with that being said, trying to be fair about this, You're not standing up and screaming about Arizona. And Arizona and Chicago both had 12 games left in their regular season. And I think it's
Montreal,
incredibly difficult. It's incredibly difficult to say Chicago, really, when they both had 12 games to go and Arizona has two more points than the Blackhawks.
Montreal, if they were to go 9-1-1, as you threw out there, in their last 11 games, to make the top eight in the East, which I don't know is relevant 100% because it looks like not all these teams are going to come back. But if they, in a regular season, they would have had to have gone 9-1-1 just to have a 0.7% chance of making the playoffs. 90 points wasn't going to do it in the East. So realistically, they were out of it.
Yeah.
All right, so let's take Chicago. They have, right now, 72 points. 32, 30, and 8. If they went 10-2 in their last 12, they would have about a 50-50 chance of making it in a regular year. So do they deserve a chance to come back and like basically be in a tournament where you're in the tournament, right? If you get hot, and we've seen stranger things happen, right? I mean, you can go back years when 16 out of 21 teams made it. You had some teams that were bad in the regular season make deep playoff runs. I just don't know if that's what I would like to open the door up with, but I see why they're doing it. I'm just curious about that.
Yeah. So your whole point is that if we'll use Chicago as an example, if Chicago makes the run and wins the cup, you know, how would everybody feel about that? I know I wouldn't like it mainly because it's Chicago, but
they wouldn't have been there in all likelihood.
Yeah, right.
In all likelihood, that's the key word. In all likelihood, which means you don't know. And that's why that's their wiggle room. That's where they can say, well, you don't know that. That's your opinion.
And but you're lowering the chances for other teams who have earned, you know, to be in there in front. Now Nashville might have to play Chicago just to get into the tournament. That's what I'm saying if they go this route.
Willie, in these times, all bets are off. All logic or everything that you
know,
can throw out there,
but
it's
I'm just pointing out that people aren't going to be happy with whatever they choose, and that's a given. I'm just saying, prepare for that.
Actually,
right.
In
and
this
if they
scenario,
said,
there would be a lot of bets, Darren.
And if they said the cutoff was Chicago's out in the West, but Arizona's in, then that just leaves the new theme of, oh, Chicago's out with the same number of games to go, and Arizona is up 2 points on them, but Arizona's in? Really? You can tell us for sure that the Coyotes are better than the Blackhawks in the final 12 games? You see what I mean? It's just, it's never ending. And I just think, look, there's nothing that's going to please everybody or probably even the masses. It's going to create somewhat of a stink no matter what. Someone will write the article. Someone will be on a talk show screaming and bellyaching about whatever decision they come up with. The bottom line is there is no right answer in these times. So to me, whatever you believe, and we all can sit there and say, yeah, I'm okay with kicking Chicago out of the playoffs. That's fine by me. But I also know that how are they out, you know, any more than Arizona is in or out. I mean, there's really not that. I mean, Minnesota's 3 points ahead of Chicago. So, I mean, is Minnesota that much better than Chicago? I mean, do you really know if you put Chicago and Minnesota in a playoff series in round one, really, you really know how that's going to play out?
Listen,
you'd be shocked
I don't know
if the Blackhawks won?
If everybody hasn't played for 3 months, how do you even know
that's
Detroit
a great point.
couldn't be competitive in a,
well,
in a 2 out of 3?
That, now you went
in a
too
2
far.
Out of 3?
You went too far.
Detroit's
too far.
Yeah, okay,
too
well far. let's take a different example. Let's take Chicago. All right, you got Jonathan Toews, you got Patrick Kane. They're refreshed. Nobody's played in a while. Maybe somebody's rusty. Some guys are in better shape than others. Everybody's healed up. How crazy would it be for Chicago to win 2 out of 3 against anybody?
It's not going to be crazy for anybody to
win. Not at all.
2 out of 3.
And we're
sitting here talking about it. That's why it is important to consider who gets in. So what's more fair, 20 or 24 or 16? What's the fairest way to do it?
None of them.
None of the above.
None.
Because we don't know. There's not going to be any closure on the regular season. So you're just throwing darts. You're guessing.
And it also creates conversation. I mean, if they come out at the end of the week in the NHL and the NHLPA, they've agreed we're going to have a 2014 playoff. That's what we're going to do. That's how we're coming back. We'll start in a month. and that's it. For the next month, you're going to have debate and controversy and some people on one side saying this is crap, this isn't fair. You know, Chicago, Montreal, they don't deserve to be in. And then you're going to have the other side. Well, you know, I applaud the NHL for having a plan, and this will be fun to watch, a 24-team tournament. The point is, you're talking about it.
Whether I guess like the only point I'm like making it, is when you see it written that, hey, there's a lot of momentum for 24 teams so that you can get Chicago and Montreal in, I do wonder about that. Although those are huge media markets. Right, especially having Montreal be a part of that, that would certainly grab interest around the league. And so if that's part of the motivation, I see why they're doing it. It's certainly not a purist. I'm just pointing that out.
I would just say,
and I asked the question, if it was Arizona and Florida in those spots, would they do that for them? And if the answer is no, then you gotta say, wait a minute, guys, this is weird.
So you think it's just about markets?
It's absolutely about markets, how they're coming up with 24.
I don't think he's completely off base with that, Darren.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that's a stretch. I mean, yeah, of course, they're big.
The Rangers are in seventh place, and they have 79 points, but they're in what, seventh place in their division. But
they're
probably going to be
looking in.
But fourth in the conference.
Yeah, but that's the outside looking in, though.
Yeah.
Technically.
Oh, they're absolutely on the outside going in. Yeah, because the East is better, right? That's a very deep division they're in. But they're going to get the Rangers in there.
I would say in these times, you'd be better off being safe than sorry and trying to pick who doesn't belong in, because no one's going to fight you on Detroit. No one's going to fight you on Ottawa. No one's going to fight you on New Jersey and Buffalo. Those four teams, you know, nobody's going to fight you on. Nobody's going to fight you on San Jose, Los Angeles, and Anaheim. Chicago and Montreal. Montreal is probably the one that you can for sure say, all right, you could make a real case they don't belong. But once again, the rest, you might as well just put them in, because no one's really going to give you a ton of resistance rather than you start picking and choosing, because then you leave yourself open for people to go, oh, but you picked them over them? Really? How do you know that? They're separated by a point or 2 points or 3 points, and one team had 12 games to go and the other one only had 11 to play, and the team with 12 is the one that's 3 points behind, so you know. And the other one's got 11 games to play. It's just you leave yourself open for everybody to scrutiny on, you know, your decision of where the cutoff was. Where now, if you just basically cast a wider net, it leaves less people belly aching about your cutoff, because everything below those Chicago in the
really
West
don't have an argument,
and Montreal
that,
in the East, nobody is going to question the teams below them.
Because what would you rather have? Would you rather have 24 teams with a couple at the bottom and you go, maybe they shouldn't be there? Or would you just rather
or
come
20
back?
And there's four teams?
No, or 31.
Four markets going screaming.
No, my point is, or would
but
you rather
you
them just open it up to everybody? I would
Montreal's
hate
Montreal's playoff chances when the season stopped, according to Sports Club stats, were 0.03%.
Okay, 0.03%. So okay, so let's do 20. You keep hinting at 20. Okay, who's the four teams out? Give me the four teams.
The four teams out, I think, would be Montreal. Let's see.
Chicago.
So that gets you down to
Minnesota.
22.
No, I want to hear who Willie's other two are. I mean,
I think
know.
Arizona.
Oh, so Arizona's out.
That would be the next lowest on the list.
Then who?
And I think it would be the Rangers.
And Minnesota's in with 77 points.
Or no, it would be Florida. I think it would be Florida at 78.
78 points. So you're gonna put a team in with less points and leave a team out with more points. And
but
oh, by the way,
East West, based on East West.
And by the way, Florida still had 13 games to go.
Yeah, so that comes down to whether you go by points percentage or not. I just find it convenient that Montreal and Chicago are in the hunt despite having 0.03% chance of making it in Montreal's case and 2.6% chance for Chicago.
Montreal is the real one in question. Okay, so then you can't have 23 teams then.
Well, Chicago has one more point than Montreal, so it's not like Chicago's way better, has a way bigger chance.
But you just said if they got on a heater, it's 50-50. Montreal gets on a heater, it's still, you know, in church praying on your knees, fingers
yes.
crossed,
they
toes
could go
crossed.
Undefeated, 11-0, and have a 19.7% chance. That's the highest that they can do, a maximum of 93 points.
That's what I'm getting at. It really wasn't about Chicago and Montreal. It's if you go to 20, okay, then who are the other two teams? And that's where it's going to get really sticky.
I hear you.
And really hairy. And that's where you're going to create the mess.
I'm not even saying that I would necessarily do it different. I just find it interesting. And I ask the question, would they have done it this way if it were two different markets than Chicago and Montreal, who happen to be in spots 23 and 24? It's a convenient line to draw.
Well, Shea Weber was nice enough to come on the show, and for that alone, he deserves a shot at the playoffs for just coming on the show
yes.
during these times.
My vote is for
Montreal. Put him in.
Put him in. Bring on Chicago. Nashville versus Chicago, 2 out of 3. Loser goes home.
If the captain was willing to come on the show with us during these times and talk for 20 minutes, then put him in, I say. You want to rethink it now? Who's with me?
I'm with you.
So you've changed. All right, we'll come back. Adam Rittenberg has written a piece on ESPN.com. We will talk to him on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Darren Donick and Chase continues here on 102.5 The Game. Our show continues with an interview of Adam Rittenberg, who, of course, has been writing for ESPN a long time. He used to specialize in the Big Ten, but now covers all of college football. And he wrote a great piece, and we're into this mode now of in the stoppage and the pause that we're in the sports world, really looking back, catching up on a lot of things that maybe we hadn't been paying attention to as much. And there's been some great sports writing that has come out of it. And Adam wrote a very good piece that I got a chance to look at about Maurice Claret. All of us who are sports fans who can go back that far, so, you know, our age, everybody's got their memory of Maurice Claret leading the Ohio State Buckeyes to the national championship, a great game against Miami, and then all the issues that followed with him. Adam caught up with him here recently. A lot of you may have even seen the 30 for 30 on Maurice Claret that brought to light a lot of the story of that. So, Adam, thanks a lot for coming on with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
You start off in the tweet that caught my attention. My life started once the game was over. Maurice Claret has really become a great success story, taking the mistakes he's made in his life and turning it into a positive and making do with what he's had since he's come out of prison. It's a great story.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. You know, I'd written about Maurice back in 2015 when he was getting some attention for speaking to college football teams and other college sports teams around the country. I spent time with him at Alabama as he visited with the Tide and down at Florida State and Jimbo Fisher. And so I got to know him well then. And, you know, we've stayed in touch. And, you know, while he enjoys that work, you know, he really wanted to do something that was more than, you know, just going to a team one day and making a speech and maybe staying in touch with a couple of the players. He wanted to, you know, give back ultimately to his community and help people that, you know, are struggling with some of the things that he went through, you know, as a younger man. And, you know, his next big project, and we kind of address it a little bit in this piece, is that he wants to create a facility where colleges can essentially send their athletes to him to work with. He can work with them on whether it's their mental health or substance abuse or just, you know, planning for, you know, life after, you know, their athletic careers are over, because he says there's just something wrong psychologically with athletes where they don't think about what's going to happen when it's over. And when they're realizing that it's over, they can get into a pretty dark place, which is obviously what happened with him in his life after things ended with Ohio State and the NFL.
It's such an important message. And it seems like so many overlook it. Who even ones that make it to the NFL and play for a few years, of how young you actually are when your career is over, even if you play until you're 25 or 26 or 27 years old. Your life is really, in a lot of ways, still just beginning.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, I think, again, I think his thing is, there's obviously a you know, if you have a mental health issue, let's address that. Let's be open about that. But then also, how can we, you know, plan for the rest of your life and figure out how to make a contribution? You know, again, and again, Maurice, as you can see in the piece, has some very strong opinions. We didn't get into everything, but he thinks an athlete that merely goes back to his community and runs a sports camp is not doing enough. He wants to encourage athletes to be much more involved in, especially where they're from, like he is in Youngstown, and trying to help people because of the platform they have. And he wants to empower athletes. So it's not just the piece of helping them with, you know, whatever issues they're dealing with and being very open and authentic about that. But how can you help your community because of the platform that you have as a high profile athlete? You know, he knows that he's still best known for being that freshman running back on the Ohio State team, and when they won a national title, and then obviously the controversy that happened after that. But he's, you know, trying to use that notoriety to you know, get into some doors that maybe he couldn't get into if he didn't have that platform, to do the much better work and the more impactful work that he's doing now in Youngstown, and certainly with some of these college athletes that he talks to.
Yeah, it's very layered, because as you said, it's not just a guy made some bad decisions. There's a lot of things, as you mentioned, mental health issues that he was open about, with depression and the medication he's on, alcoholism that went with it. So there's a lot of experience he's had going to prison and coming out, dealing with the stigma of that. There are things that he has to offer with this perspective. But one thing that I thought was very compelling in the article, Adam, was his bond with Mike Tyson, of all people. And Mike Tyson, yeah, of course, has been in the news. He says he's in great shape. He wants to go fight somebody. But explain that bond. That's an unlikely thing that we would never think of, but those two have really hit it off.
Well, it's interesting. So, you know, I spent a lot of time with Maurice over the years and just stayed in touch with him. And, you know, this piece was essentially, let's spend a day in Youngstown and let's spend a day in Columbus. And we were essentially done with you know, the kind of time that I was reporting. We were back in Columbus, you know, at his home. He was getting ready for this baby shower. He and his fiance had a little boy back in December. This is in November. And then the Mike Tyson thing was completely a surprise. He didn't even know that Mike was in town doing this autograph signing event in Columbus. He gets a call while we're at his house from a couple of his former Ohio State teammates. And Mike Tyson's saying, hey, I want to meet you. I saw you, did an interview that you did. Maybe it was a 30 for 30. You know, get on down here. I want to meet you. So it was just a completely kind of impromptu surprise part of the piece where, and I hadn't realized that Maurice was, you know, had really looked up to Mike Tyson, at least as a boxer growing up, and felt like he played football, you know, the same way that Mike Tyson competed in boxing. And, you know, he was really starstruck. I mean, he's met a lot of people with his work over the years, Maurice has, but to see him, you know, meet Mike Tyson, and the emotion that Tyson showed in meeting Maurice was a pretty cool moment there. So that was you know, the first time, actually the second time they'd met. They had met in an after hours club in California back in 2005 or 2006, when they were, I think, both at a lower point in their lives. But it was neat to see them connect. And, you know, Maurice called a bunch of people with Tyson on FaceTime and gave him the book he just published. And so it was a very, very cool moment for him.
It was funny how you mentioned, you just kind of referenced that Pete Rose happened to be at the same event that those, yeah, two were at, but I guess they weren't as interested in talking to Pete, even though Pete probably could learn a few things from both of them as well if they all got together.
Well, it was, again, it was a very emotional, raw scene. It was a little room off of a lobby in a hotel, kind of the VIP room where these guys are before they do their autographs. And I didn't even know he was in there. And we were literally leaving the room after about 30, 40 minutes with Tyson, and Maurice kind of just does a little head nod to the corner, and I look, and there's Pete Rose just sitting there quietly the whole time. So, him and Tyson were kind of the headliners of that autograph signing event, but he was there the whole time when we were there with Tyson. So it was just another kind of like unbelievable moment of that day.
We're talking to Adam Rittenberg of ESPN, and Adam, as we switch gears a little bit, of looking ahead and what the college football season could look like. I know Mark Emmert came out yesterday, president of the NCAA and said that it's going to be up to the school presidents and the state and local officials. It won't be up to the NCAA to have a uniform start when it comes to college athletics, not just football. So where do you stand on everything? Should they get together and either be uniform by conference or the entire NCAA? What are your thoughts?
You know, I get it. I know there's a lot of leadership questions about leadership when that came out yesterday, that why isn't anybody leading here? But the fact is that we don't know a lot of things right now, and it does seem like the impact of the virus is not the same in every state. And, you know, obviously these states are all ultimately, you know, governed themselves by their presidents and by their state officials. You saw the announcement from the California State University system chair yesterday about online classes at most of their institutions all fall. You know, so that's going to affect what happens with the sports. And so while I was a little surprised that Emmert went beyond football, because obviously FBS football is not really governed by the NCAA. It's governed by the leagues. It's sort of separate from the NCAA. But the fact that they're really not taking any sort of stand as far as a uniform start date for all sports is certainly interesting. Now, the conferences I know are in close communication with one another. The commissioners, athletic directors are talking to each other, but I just think there's so much unknown at this point and how it's going to be in certain areas of the country. But here's the thing, and you guys understand this, college football is inherently regional. It always has been, and it always will be. And I think this process with what's going on is going to underscore that. I think it's very likely that we're going to see college football in some regions of the country. I think it's somewhat unlikely we're going to see college football everywhere this fall, or at least on the same timeline in every state at every FBS institution. I think that's just the reality here. So while you know, people always are going to point out, well, where's the leadership? Why isn't Mark Emmert stepping in? I think at least when it comes to football, there was never going to be one person saying this is when we're all going to start. It's just too difficult to manage that.
But I guess the bigger part of this too, and my co-host Darren has brought this up time and time again on this show, it's not just college football being affected. If college football doesn't happen, then you're going to have a lot of other sports at universities that are going away, because college football and the revenue that comes in is so important. So that's where I guess I feel like that there needs to be a committee or somebody stepping in, you know, looking at the importance of having some sort of college football in place that it affects the other sports.
Well, sure. I mean, every athletic director that we've talked to in the last couple of months has said that you know, we need football. We're not even modeling in some cases for no football because it has such a big impact on everything else. And we'd have to make some even tougher decisions than we're already making, because they know they're going to be losing millions of dollars even in this fiscal year, and certainly even more in the next fiscal year. And so, you know, I think they're going to do everything they can to get the season in. But I think there's so many questions still about how do you do it safely? How do you test? How do you what do you do if there's a positive test? What do you do? Before a game when someone's traveling from a different region to your region, do you just stay and essentially play a regional schedule or a league only schedule? But I do think they're going to do everything they can to at least get football in some respect, because of the revenue that it brings in and how it helps those other sports. Now there's going to be sports that are cut. I mean, that's the thing. You know, I know there's been only a few that have been announced publicly, but I think when this is over in 2021 or whenever it's over, you're going to see a number of varsity programs being cut around the country.
Adam Rittenberg on the line with us. In fact, that's where I was going, the announcement yesterday that the MAC put out there. And if what you said holds true, and that's what it's going to look like in the fall, and it's region by region, and some regions aren't playing college football, I do wonder how many more decisions like what the MAC conference came out with yesterday, Adam, will we see where, you know, conference tournaments in other sports, you know, things are going to be limited in other sports at universities in certain conferences. What do you think the fallout would be if indeed there are regions or pockets of the country that don't have a college football season?
Yeah, I mean, I think all these options are on the table. Now, I mean, I was surprised how bold or extreme the MAC announcement was, but I think this it's not the last type of announcement that we'll have here. And you know, they're trying to, you know, do this and maintain as much of the normalcy as they can and trying to do it safely. But I know there's been questions about certain opening games and whether the opponents are going to be changed. And I think, yeah, conference tournaments, especially in the lower profile sports, have to be looked at. Is it worth doing this, or is it worth just getting through the season with some type of champion, some type of season, even though it's not going to be normal? I mean, I do a lot with, like, you know, coach hiring and firings and the coaching carousel. I don't think this is going to be a year where we have a lot of coaching changes, because how can you blame a coach for a poor season this year because of the circumstances that everybody's going to be under? So that's just my guess here. So I think just a lot of these things that we think are normal in college sports, coaching changes, conference tournaments, the normal structure of the season, you know, having a non-conference schedule, playing a national schedule, a lot of these things are going to change most likely because of the circumstances and the unknowns right now. I mean, I think some more decisions are going to be made, I think, towards the end of May. I think we'll have a better idea about the college football season during the month of June. But, the whole process, just following it, it just seems to change every day as far as, you know, when certain states are hitting their peak and what governors are saying about large gatherings and how far out until we have a normal looking sporting event. It just seems to be being pushed back and back and back. And I know there's an urgency for people to play, but this is just a situation that we're in.
Yeah, fair point. And oh, by the way, a lot of coaches taking reduced salary. So it does kind of feel like, you know, dare I say, a sport that has so much turnover, as you said, that you cover, they may be going into a season where, for the most part, everybody gets a pass. I mean, that sounds crazy to say, but that may be the case. We had Herm Edwards on yesterday, and we had a great conversation with him yesterday on the program. And you remember,
really?
Adam.
He's so boring. I mean,
I know.
He never says anything. I'm shocked that
he's shy. I know. You have to really kind of pull to get stuff out of him. But we were able to do that, tongue-in-cheek. Everybody, he was met. That hire at Arizona State was met with a lot of criticism. Like, what are you doing? You know, this guy has been on ESPN for a decade. You know, he's been far removed from the coaching ranks. And look what he did. I mean, we watched that primetime game Saturday night last year where his team at home beat Oregon. They won their bowl game. I mean, it has been a really good hire at Arizona State. You look at what Mack Brown is doing at North Carolina. When Mack Brown got hired, it's like, what? Well, North Carolina is bringing back Mack Brown, and right now they're the number two recruiting class, or three, depending on what service you look at. You know, they're killing it on the recruiting trail. This is North Carolina football, not basketball. What does it say, Adam, that those type of stories where these guys have been brought back and didn't get really much of attention, and right now those two guys are doing really good jobs?
Yeah, they are. I mean, I think there's momentum in both programs, especially in North Carolina with their young quarterback. And right now, I think they're number two, number three in ESPN's recruiting rankings for 2021. They already recruited well this past year, and that's been part of Mack's legacy throughout his career. And then, you know, yeah, I mean, I was at the Arizona State-Oregon game. I could tell the excitement there around Herm Edwards. And I think he's also recruiting well, also has a young quarterback, who's just in their second year. So they have a chance to take a step forward as a program this year. And so I think what it shows is that, there's not, one type of coach that's always going to work for every school. I'm putting together a piece for next week on the 25 best coaching hires in the last 25 years in college football. And one theme in going through the names is that there's tremendous variety. You know, there was kind of those can't misses like the Nick Sabans and the Urban Meyers, but who thought Dabo Swinney would be the coach that he's turned out to be? Who thought, you know, Boise State promoting their offensive coordinator, Chris Peterson, would lead to the greatest stretch for a non-power program, you know, probably in the sports history? So, you know, it just shows that you have to be creative as a school and maybe go against the grain. I know that I certainly was surprised by the Herm Edwards hire, a little bit less surprised by the Mack Brown hire, but so far both of those are working out. And, despite both of them being older coaches, they have energy and they also aren't afraid to recruit. And those are two qualities that are going to help both of them going forward.
Yep. Really appreciate the visit and good piece on Maurice Claret. We had Ryan Leaf on here recently. We had a great conversation with him about his journey and his comeback and trying to come back from, you know, a lot of image repair. And it's cool when we see stories like this, right? Maurice Claret and Ryan Leaf, we can state a lot of examples. And a lot of times they don't ever come back, and that's what they're always remembered for. But I always, you know, I think we root in this country for stories like this. And what a turnaround. Really enjoyed the piece. Thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it is a country of second chances, and I've had a chance to work with Ryan on SiriusXM. He's a great guy. He's done great work, and both he and Maurice do inspire a lot of people with what they've done after they finished playing. So, yeah, appreciate you guys having me on to talk about this.
Continue to be safe, Adam. Thanks for the visit.
You too. Thank you.
All right, Adam Rittenberg, ESPN's senior writer covering college football. We'll come back and put a bow on the second hour. Tim Hasselbeck will join us at the top of the third hour at high noon. You're listening to Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hey, if you own or manage a small business and you're open, you want to let people know about it, we've got Free Business Friday, as we said here on Wednesday. So we're getting a little bit closer to that, and that will be our third installment on a Friday. And we're excited about that, and you should be excited about it. You want to get involved? This Friday we're going to be offering free advertising to local businesses that are safely open and working. That is a no-cost, no-catch offer for you. That should have your attention by now. Hopefully you've perked up hearing that. If you're manage or own a small business, you can visit GameNashville.com/FBF for more information. GameNashville.com/FBF, which is Free Business Friday. And it's our way of supporting small businesses as we get through this together. And I hope a lot of you will get involved in that this week. It has been a huge success the last two Fridays, and would love to hear from more of you this upcoming Friday. Trevor Maddich joins Jared and the GM every Tuesday on the program here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And, of course, they always get into some good college football discussions, as you just heard Adam Rittenberg with us, and he weighed in on kind of this upcoming season.
What I'm hearing is that they are desperate to find a way to make it work. We've heard coaches and administrators say that conferences might play independent of other conferences. The Pac-12 is talking about having an 11-game season where they only play Pac-12 teams. The Big Ten, there have been representatives from that conference talking about how they might have to play with a limited number of teams, maybe 8 or 10 instead of the full complement, because some states in the Big Ten or some schools might choose not to play football at all, but the rest of them that want to play, want to play. There's so much money involved. But you talk about the unknowns, Jared. There's a million unknowns here.
So there you go. There's Trevor Maddich yesterday on the afternoon show talking about what he's hearing about this upcoming college football season. I don't know if you guys saw the announcement by the MAC yesterday that I brought up in the Adam Rittenberg interview, but that's just, to me, just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, those are things to come, especially if we're talking about areas or conferences or regions of the country that are unable to figure out a way to play this upcoming college football season. And this is what we've been talking about, right? This would be kind of the fallout of that, and it'll be way worse than what the MAC conference put out yesterday, even though it was pretty darn aggressive yesterday. And unfortunately, it'll be worse if some conferences are unable to play this year.
Yeah, and I mean, that's been something consistent that you brought up throughout this whole thing, that you kind of have to look at it more of a bigger picture, because the bigger picture shows you a lot, that there's more than just a season that could be affected. I mean, it could be programs, it could be conferences, and it's not just, well, they're going to go away for a little bit. It could be forever. So that's the, and yeah, I'm reading through this MAC announcement that you referenced, and it's just, it stinks. You hate seeing that, but that's what a lot of areas, or what a lot of programs are having to do right now.
Yeah, they've
one thing that I thought about, guys, was the Title IX factor in all of this. If we're just going to say, hey, based on the revenues, even if the college football season is played, but the revenues are going to be way, way down, I think we can reasonably say that in a best-case scenario, and a particular athletic program wants to – make budget cuts. With Title IX, don't you have to make an equal budget cut across the board? And what would that mean?
Exactly. So what are you saying again?
Well, Title IX is not going to go away because of this. So if you're going to cut programs, you can't just say, well, I'm going to cut four women's programs and keep football. You have to do it equally somehow to be compliant.
Yeah, I don't know how that's going to work.
That's
Willie.
Tricky.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I think presumably you can probably look at some of the secondary, or they call them Olympic type men's sports, as those are the ones that are going to pay a big penalty, right? Because presumably nobody's going to cut football. Maybe there'll be a couple of teams that might go down that road. But the big ones in the Power Five, they're not giving up football.
Well, if you cut football, you're done with sports. I mean, at that school. Football's your last resort.
Well, I mean, there are ways to run an athletic program without football. Look at the Big East Conference. They have a pretty nice conference. They do well in basketball. None of them have football. None of them have scholarship football anyway.
I haven't looked at their books lately, so if you say they're doing well, then okay.
Well, they field a team like Villanova and Creighton and Marquette and Georgetown. I mean, they make it work, right, in their own way.
Yeah, the sports in the MAC, if you haven't seen the story, that will no longer have a postseason indefinitely will be baseball, softball, men's and women's soccer, men's and women's tennis, women's lacrosse, and field hockey. A basketball postseason tournament will still be held, but all first-round home games will be eliminated. Instead, they're only going to take the top eight teams from the regular season and not the entire conference. So, and they're going to expand to a 20-game conference slate, which used to be just 18. So these are things coming down from their commissioner. Last name, Steinbrecher. You ring a bell?
Of course.
Well, used to be the commissioner of the OVC, correct? John Steinbrecher?
Yeah, absolutely. For a good while.
Yeah, I don't know, to answer your question, how that would work. I have no
Title IX is for all conferences, and Title IX is a far-reaching thing. It's not just something that's in the MAC or in the SEC. It's everywhere. So I'm just curious about that aspect of it.
It's a good point, and I wonder how much that's been discussed, you know, internally, if there have been discussions already about, okay, what's our plan? If we got to make this plan, what is the plan?
The AP put out there that last month the MAC was a conference along with five other conferences, the American Athletic Conference, Mountain West, Sun Belt, Conference USA, have all asked the NCAA for relief during these times. So they have asked for, you know, money, financial aid, and all kinds of stuff on that front. And so, like I said, this is now. And we're not even talking about, you know, a college football season that doesn't happen. They're looking for relief now. It will only get worse. But we'll see if they can figure out how to make this work moving forward. And that's some of the challenges that college football has for the upcoming fall season. We'll come back and kick things off with Tim Hasselbeck to start the third hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on FinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to FinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
FinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit FinQuest.com for more details.